What is up, and welcome back to another episode of the Wizards Podcast. I'm your host, Greg Finberg. In today's episode, we're going to be talking about a couple things. We're obviously going to be recapping another, blowout loss for the Washington Wizards, their second in a row. This one, a 132 to 101 loss to the Miami Heat. And then we're also going to be diving into, at the beginning of the episode, some of the comments that Will Dawkins made today when he was speaking with media after the trade deadline, after the team acquired Anthony Davis. He did one of these after they got Trae Young, did another today and answered some questions that the media, that the fans have had about some of the new additions, about Anthony Davis and if he's going to play this season or not. And so I'm going to talk a little bit about what he said to begin the pod and then obviously get into some of that recap of the 31-point loss to the Miami Heat. To start off with Dawkins and some of the comments that he made, he was talking to reporters and obviously he got asked the question by David Aldridge, I think, who asked it, who was basically saying, is Anthony Davis going to play this season in Washington? Obviously this comes on the heels of the Chris Haynes report that Anthony Davis is going to be sat for the remainder of the season because AD suffered a hand injury, is to I think to his left hand. It was a sprain, they called it, I think. But he suffered the injury on January 8th. And then I think on the 13th, Shams tweeted out that Anthony Davis is going to forego surgery and he should be back within 6 weeks, which, would take him to probably around the start of March, obviously after the All-Star break. So it's not like he was expected to play now. And the Wizards listed him out for today's game against Miami, I believe, with some sort of hand sprain or finger sprain or whatever they listed it as. But that's the injury designation they gave him. And so the question was posed to Will Dawkins, like, do you plan to bring Anthony Davis back at some point? And he basically said that AD is going to go back to Dallas. He's going to continue to rehab his hand injury with some of the specialists, I guess, that he was seeing out there, and sort of continue that plan. And then he said he's going to have a pretty important doctor's appointment over to the All-Star break, and sort of, reassess and see where he's at that standpoint before, obviously the Wizards brass meets with him and sees what the process is like. I think he basically said, like, yeah, like it's possible that Anthony Davis comes back this season, but he was pretty non-committal on saying that for certain because obviously I think, best case scenario for the tank is that Anthony Davis doesn't play this year and the Wizards keep losing. But it's also they have the doctor's appointment that they can sort of hide behind and say, look, we don't know yet, and we'll reassess it at that point. But like Will Dawkins was saying, he didn't say Anthony Davis is out for the year. He didn't confirm Haynes's report that AD would miss the rest of the season. He just basically, referred to that doctor's appointment as an important one, and said AD will be back in Dallas for a little bit, probably through the All-Star break, as he continues to rehab that hand injury. So a pretty important update there from Will Dawkins on Anthony Davis. Again, he was listed as out for today's game, and let me see if I can find the exact injury designation that AD had. I think it definitely had something to do with the hand, but they listed him as out with a finger sprain. He had ligament damage in his hand. I guess it was in a specific finger or multiple fingers, but it was a finger sprain for Anthony Davis on Washington's injury report. I'm sure you'll see that as the injury designation moving forward until obviously they reassess post All-Star break. But like Trae Young, wouldn't expect to see Anthony Davis, I guess, anytime soon, but that doesn't mean he will be out for the entire season. Moving on, he also, Will Dawkins also provided an update on D'Angelo Russell, who was listed as not with the team today. Haven't seen, they made a welcome post for him, but you haven't seen any content with D'Angelo Russell involved in any capacity. You haven't seen him on the Wizards bench since the trade. And so obviously some fans were speculating, what was good with Russell. He still has, I think $5.5 million contract this season. And then he's under contract, I think, with a $5.9 million player option for next year that I would assume he picks up. But he hasn't reported to the team yet. And Will Dawkins said, and this is courtesy of Henry J. Brown or at Henry JBR Sports on Twitter. I recommend following. Henry's a really good dude. He said, according to Wizards GM Will Dawkins, D'Angelo Russell is, quote, not going to report until we try to figure out what's best for him and us in our future, end quote. I mean, that's, I think Dawkins pretty much saying like, look, D'Lo hasn't reported yet. And, you know, that's not like a he's refusing to come to DC. I think it's just, look, you know, you obviously aren't going to be playing over some of our young guys. And as we're tanking, we don't really have much of a spot or a role for you. I mean, you saw something similar last year with Marcus Smart, who played sparingly, but then didn't play much the rest of the season. And then obviously was bought out in the offseason. Something like that might make sense for D'Lo. They obviously can't trade him now, but you know, if they feel as if, you know, they won't even be able to do much next year and they can get off his contract, maybe a contender, you know, would like him in the buyout market and they're able to find an agreement, then sure, you know, you might as well buy him out now, let him go to a contender and try to win one. But at the moment, right, he's not going to be a part of the team. Based on what Will Dawkins said, I don't see D'Angelo Russell suiting up this year or next year for the Wizards, and I honestly don't think he'll even be on the team's roster at the start of next season, the way that Will sort of addressed that part of the trade. And so that's an important update there. And then earlier in the day, the Wizards requested waivers on Dante Exum, who was one of the other players involved in that trade. Again, 30 years old, expiring $3.3 million contract. Again, didn't make sense that he would play at all. He's going to walk in free agency. So Washington is sort of moving on from him now. Maybe it allows him to go and sign somewhere else next year, obviously. But he is out for the remainder of this season. So, he wouldn't have played anyway. It's not a D'Angelo Russell situation. But the Wizards did request waivers on him. So that's already one of those four players they got in that trade being waived and moving on from the team. And D'Angelo Russell looks like he's going to join him at some point in the future. Speaking of the last member of that trade, Jaden Hardy, 23-year-old guard, still got 2 more years left on that contract, with the second being a team option at $6 million. I would expect him to sort of be here at least for the foreseeable future. And Henry also tweeted out a picture, credit to him, of Jaden Hardy at the Wizards game. He was on the bench today, standing next to Trae Young. So he's with the team. He's at the games, and based on that, I would assume he's part of the plans. But that's a little bit of an update from what Will Dawkins said. I'm sure there's more that you can watch. I don't know if they'll post it onto their YouTube. They typically do. But you know, that's sort of my biggest takeaways from what Dawkins said before today's game. Now moving on to the actual game. The Wizards took a brief pause from like full on blatant tanking, because you know they did have, I think, 12 guys listed as questionable or out on their injury report this morning before the game. But Alex Saar, Bilal Coulibaly, Keyshawn George, and Tristan Vukcevic, all of which were questionable, three of which didn't play against the Nets, suited up for this one. Obviously, I think it's best for the Wizards that they didn't play yesterday and played today. I'm sure that's no surprise to them. I'm sure that was, you know, strategic on their part. But those guys played. Anthony Gill, hand contusion, did not. I'm sure a lot of the tanking brass is going to call the Wizards out for that one. But obviously, a lot of all the other guys from the Dallas trade didn't play. Trae Young, Trey Johnson, and Cam Whitmore all remain out. And so the Wizards had some of their guys back, and it started out pretty well. I mean, they were up 20-11. There was a great sequence from Alex Saar where he had a block, a couple of rebounds, dribbled it up on multiple occasions to lead the fast break, found George for an open three, caught a lob from Bub, hit a turnaround 15-footer, all within about a minute and a half, to cause a Miami timeout. And the Wizards were playing really well. You thought maybe this would be another Detroit game where, yeah, they have some injuries, but you know, they play a lot better and they win a game that most people didn't think they would win. But I mean, you blinked your eye and pretty quickly, it was 58-39 Miami. They just went on a huge run. The Wizards couldn't really put the ball in the basket. They struggled from three. They struggled to score inside, and Miami did the complete opposite. I mean, I think they shot around 50% from three in the first half. Really had no answer for them inside with Ware and Adebayo and some of their other bigger players. Norman Powell was pretty good from three. Jacachonis, I think, went 5 of 5 from deep. So again, they couldn't miss. They were open looks. And the Wizards had a great start that they just sort of threw away pretty quickly. And so obviously down 19, they entered halftime down 74-52. And I mean, Miami didn't really look back. It was pretty big blowout loss for the Wizards. Second in a row where it's pretty non-competitive tanking loss. I think both results are what the Wizards would prefer, given that they are trying to intentionally not put themselves in the best positions to win these games. I mean, one of those moments kind of happened in the third quarter. I mean, Sarr entered halftime playing pretty well, but had four fouls. You know, Bam and Ware sort of had their way with him for the most part on that end. And then he picked up his fifth foul 2 seconds into the half. I think the Wizards turned it over. Pretty unlucky play, but Sarr, wrong place, wrong time, picks up his fifth foul. I mean, typically, right, if he's your best player, you know, you're probably going to sit him if you're trying to win the game. But obviously, the Wizards aren't. And Brian Keefe, you know, just left Alex in the game. He didn't end up fouling out, but again, like, that's it's another moment of like, if you're really trying to win this game, you know, obviously Alex is coming out probably earlier in the first half, so he doesn't pick up the fourth foul. And then when he picks up the fifth, 2 seconds into the second half, you're probably taking him out again and putting in like Tristan Vukcevic, and then not putting Sarr back until late third, early fourth, if necessary. But I mean, there was no hesitation. I mean, Bilal had four fouls for a while, and there was no hesitation to leave him in the game. And yeah, I'm sure that's sort of trust from Brian Keefe's end, but we've seen him have a pretty short leash with that in recent years. And obviously, in today's game, he really that wasn't an issue at all. And the Wizards were down a lot at the time; they were down 22, I think. And so, like, it wasn't the end of the world. But that was another moment where it was just like, I mean, there wasn't even a thought to pull Alex Sarr because he might foul out. If he fouled out, he fouled out. Like, it's fine. I mean, that just sort of showcases where the Wizards' heart is at in terms of this whole tanking thing. A couple injury things to monitor. Keyshawn George rolled his, I think, I don't know which ankle. I'm not even going to try to guess. He rolled one of his ankles in the third quarter, just sort of landed or stepped on the foot of a Heat player. A pretty unlucky injury. I mean, it didn't look like a really nasty roll by any means. Just looked like, you know, a typical ankle roll, which obviously it hurts when that happens. And so he was quickly ruled out by the Wizards with an ankle sprain, didn't return. And I mean, it's like a dreaded ankle sprain if you're a player on this team or on a tanking team, obviously specifically this Wizards team, because anytime it's some sort of, you know, ankle sprain or back contusion, knee contusion, something of that nature, like, I feel bad because I think Keyshawn George is going to miss a couple games and probably more time than he probably needs to. And it's obviously because the Wizards are tanking. They know what they're trying to do. And anytime they can sort of, you know, hide behind an injury and just say, look, like, we're not just benching Keyshawn because we want to. Like, he's hurt and we're being cautious. You know, Trey Johnson, I think he's missed 4 or 5 games in a row now with that ankle sprain. Like, it didn't look too bad. And he was able to come back into the game and knock down the free throws. You know, I honestly, the way he was walking, thought he would come back and play. But the Wizards were cautious, and now he has continued to miss time. Will Dawkins and Brian Keefe have been non-committal on giving any sort of timeline. I think they said today to Bijan Todd that he sort of resumes some activities. But again, they're being very cautious with it. So, like, if you don't see Keyshawn George for a couple games and maybe more, it shouldn't come as any surprise to you because, you know, that's sort of what the Wizards are doing. Anytime there's some injury, you know, they're going to do what they can to sort of drag it out and allow some of the younger guys, obviously, behind George. They know what they have in George. They know what they have in Trey Johnson. They want to see what they have in Jahmyr Watkins and Will Riley and Sharif Cooper and others. And so it helps them in that regard. But again, I wouldn't be surprised if Key misses a decent bit of time, probably more time than you think he is going to, with that ankle sprain. And then the Bilal Coulibaly, he seemed like he got hit in the face 3 to 4, 5 times in this game. So many times he had a, you know, checking for a bloody nose or something like that. And then late in the fourth, I don't think it was malicious, but Jakachonis on the Heat was gone for a loose ball and hit Bilal in the face, sort of swiped him near that eye area. Bilal went down. You know, I think someone tried to help him up. He, like, smacked his hand away. And that wasn't him being like mean. I think Bilal was just frustrated. I mean, we've all been there where you just keep getting hit in the face when you're playing ball or any type of sport, and you just, like, want to punch the wall because you're so frustrated that it keeps happening. They gave Jakachonis a flagrant one. Again, I don't think it was anything like malicious. I don't think he tried it in the face. He didn't even see Bilal there. So again, nothing that bad. But Bilal is frustrated, rightfully so. He went right to the locker room after he was down for a bit, obviously walked off on his own power, but he was frustrated, and I really don't blame him for being frustrated there. I mean that it's probably going to be listed, as a face contusion. Same thing for George. Like now, when someone gets injured on this tanking team, you should extend that timeline way more than you think. And Bilal's facial contusion, I'm sure, isn't as deep as the ankle sprain that Keyshawn George suffered today. But again, I wouldn't be surprised if you see them out of the lineup for a couple games at least. Because the Wizards can, and the injuries sort of give them ex an excuse to do so ethically, I guess, because like the evidence is right there if you watched the game that they're actually hurt. And so those were two guys. And I thought, George actually had a pretty decent game. He had 13 in the first half, was pretty quiet, didn't score in the second half, but he made some open looks. Again, enjoyed how he got to his spots. Bob Carrington, 13 points. He's getting it done a lot more in the mid-range, I've noticed. He's only 1 of 6 from three in today's game, but was 6 of 13. So again, went 5 of 7 when he was shooting inside the three-point line. And I like that. We know he can shoot threes. I think Bob can make the above the break, transition three. I think he's got to stop taking it as much because it's not going in nearly as much as I think he would or the Wizards would hope. But he finished with 13 and 5. Again, pretty solid game from him. Alex Saar, 12 points, 12 boards, 5 assists. I really liked his passing today. Thought he got his teammates involved. Thought, the Heat tried to take him away, and he didn't force too many things. Again, 6 of 13, only took 1 3. So liked the patience he displayed on the offensive end. Obviously, the 12 rebounds. Anytime Saar gets above 10 rebounds, like, it's a pretty good day at the office for him. But I thought defensively, he wasn't as big or as good as he needed to be. I thought Ware and Adebayo had their way with him on that end. I thought he rebounded well, but I also thought that, he allowed a lot of second chance points for Miami. And so, yes, I enjoyed what he did on offense in 26 minutes, battled foul trouble. But I thought defensively it was one of his weaker showings of the year, which is saying a lot considering he's typically a really good defender. But certainly thought he could have been better on that end. And then you look at Justin Champagne, 13.7 boards. Again, got to the line 4 times. He's a pretty solid player, pretty consistent player. Didn't have the game 1 of 5 from three that I'm sure he would want. But again, another game in double figures for Champagne. Pretty good there. Apart from that, you look at the bench. Tristan Vukcevic led all Wizards with 14 points on 5 of 11 from the field. Made 4 of his 5 threes with 5 boards. Again, I really enjoyed what he was able to provide offensively. Like, he has the touch. The outside jumper looks legit in the last couple games. He's sort of proven that it's a pretty legit jumper. Able to stretch the defense, has good touch. Again, we all knew this. Defensively, again, thought he was pretty non-existent. Didn't, again, like what he provided on that end, in terms of interior defense, which isn't a surprise. He also had 4 turnovers, which is certainly not great. But he is what he is. He's a guy that can come in, and you're not gonna be asking him to come off the bench and provide rim protection. You're asking him to be a pretty volume scorer, stretch the floor. In the last couple games, especially today, I think he's done that. So I don't know how I can really sit here and be upset at what I've seen recently from Tristan. He is what he is, and he's pretty good when he's on, and so. Thought he was pretty solid. You had Jahmyr Watkins, who I thought one of his better NBA games in terms of scoring 12 points on 5 of 10 from the field, 7 boards as well. I think my friend Bijan Todd tweeted it out. Jahmyr finished with 2 blocks and 1 steal, and that's 9 straight games for Jahmyr with a steal, which I think is the most consecutive games with a steal by a rookie at the moment, longest streak at 9. Pretty consistently getting up there in stocks and finding his way to disrupt the opposing offense in terms of getting in passing lanes or denying shots, and so really enjoyed the defense that I saw from Jahmyr, but also his ability to put some points up. Not really known for it, but again thought that he did a pretty decent job. Thought he did a pretty decent job in that regard today. Will Riley, again, not the 27 points in career high that he just had. But 9 points in 21 minutes. Again, played 24 or less minutes today, and I'm sure that was by, wasn't by accident. You don't want your rookies to be hitting that rookie wall, and playing them 40 plus minutes back to back games would do that. But 9 points on 4 of 10. I thought, obviously he got to the cup, made a three. Not the loudest game by any means for Will, but you can't come to expect him to continue to put up numbers like that, especially when he's playing significantly less minutes and in a reduced role with some of those starters coming back. And so, when you talk about the Wizards in this one, it just pretty much a non-competitive loss for the better part of it. They had a good start, but Miami kind of pounced on them. Good coaching, good adjustments, and Brian Keefe exhausted his timeouts. It really didn't do much, obviously, for the Wizards. But nonetheless, they lose. It's a better result for them than a win. Obviously, a win against the Heat does nothing to move the needle for you, but a loss moves you closer to retaining or at least guaranteeing that you can retain your top eight protected pick. So no gripes with me in terms of the result in this one. I did want to get to towards the end of this episode. I did want to touch on what the Utah Jazz did last night, because I've seen, obviously, and I addressed it on the pod yesterday, if you listen to that, I've seen all of the Nets fans, all the Knicks fans complaining on Twitter, uniting, I think, that they want to do to get the Wizards pick removed or to get the Wizards punished for the tanking they're doing. It's pretty funny because, I mean, all Wizards fans just put up the receipts that these Nets accounts had tweeted last year, earlier this year, where they're applauding the Nets for pretty blatantly tanking and resting guys that they probably don't need to rest. Here's my take on it, right? Because obviously you saw last night or yesterday that the Wizards benched a lot of players they probably didn't need to in order to make sure they lost to the Brooklyn Nets, who didn't bench anybody and played all their starters in their full rotation. And then you fast forward to the night where the Jazz play Jaren and they play Lowry and they play a bunch of their guys. And they're up, I think, 94 to 87 entering the fourth, had been up a lot in the third. And then Lowry and Jaren and I think four of their five total starters don't return for the entire fourth quarter. It was a clutch game. They were winning for the most part, I think, of the quarter. And then the Magic came back and it was a close game down the stretch. And the Jazz decided we're not going to play our starters. And I'm sure that was the plan going into the game. But they would have won, if they had just played to win, and they didn't. And I saw someone bring up that they're superstar players. And in terms of like the details of like, I don't know if it's the NBA's like tanking policy. But they, technically speaking, should be fined for it. And they were fined last year for I think missed or incorrectly listing Lauri Markkanen's injury status for a couple of games to make sure they could hold him out as they tried to tank for the top pick. Here's my take on it, right? They did what the Wizards have been doing. That's what the Wizards did against the Kings. Their starters didn't play most of the second half. Yet in a game that they were winning, or at least right there, and for the Kings team, they were winning. They did it against the Pistons for the entire pretty much second half, and they won both of those games. And I think the outrage would have been real if they were winning the entire time, then eventually did that and they lost. But you can't really get mad at a team like they're trying, yeah, obviously to tank blatantly, but they somehow won the game. They sort of got punished in and of itself because what they wanted in the loss, they didn't get. And that's what the Jazz did. The Jazz, I think, were just getting ridiculed because they lost the game. Obviously, a game they would have won if they played to win. But if you're a Wizards fan, you can't really get mad at them if you don't get mad at your own team. And I think that brings me to my overarching point on tanking. Like, I think it's awful, and I think it's a really bad look for the league. I've called it out when I've seen it in teams like Utah last year and teams like Brooklyn. I've called it out if you listen to this podcast, which I record pretty much after every game. You've listened to me countlessly say that the Wizards are blatantly tanking and it's a bad look for the league. But my point has still always been, and my stance has always been, don't hate the player, hate the game. Hate the game as much as you want. Don't get mad at Utah and Washington because they know they're not going to get punished by the league for tanking. And if they do, it's a 100K fine, slap on the wrist, please don't do it. And by the time they get to their second and third fine, where maybe it's 500K or a million, you're pretty much at the draft lottery already. And the teams, like right now, they would pay millions of dollars if it meant guaranteeing they keep their pick. You're going to see a lot of blatant tanking from these specific teams in Washington, Utah, because the NBA allows pick protections. And those teams have top eight protected picks. If they have a bottom four record, they guarantee that they are not going to fall outside the top eight. But even if they have the fifth or sixth worst record, that is another step percentage-wise closer, because I think it's only like a 3% chance if they have the fifth worst record that they get the ninth pick and can fall out of the top eight. And I'm sure it's not the biggest chance to fall outside that place if they're the sixth. And so they are incentivized to have a worse record. That's the NBA, that's the lottery. That's how they chose to set up the rules. So if you're giving me incentive to lose more games in order to, when I'm trying to keep my pick, that's my primary goal for the rest of the season, you can't get mad at me for trying to do everything I can to maximize that, to make sure that I try my best to lose as many games so I have a better chance of keeping my pick. The wins don't do anything for these teams. They get them just further away from their end goal of completing their rebuild. They get them further away from keeping their pick. And obviously, if you're not going to punish them, then the incentive isn't there to not do it. It's there to do it. It's there to rest your starters in these games. So, if you're a Wizards fan, if you're a Jazz fan, like a Nets fan, don't get mad at these teams for blatantly tanking. Like, get mad at Adam Silver because he's allowed this to happen. It's awful for the league. What other league do you see bad teams that know they have no business trying to compete blatantly trying to lose games? Like, that's a terrible look for the league. It's a terrible product. And that's just the league that Adam Silver has allowed. It's not what he created, it's what he's allowed to happen. And the further he goes without punishing it, the more these teams will get away with, the more they'll continue to tank. And obviously, the way the lottery's set up, if you allow teams like Philadelphia and San Antonio and Dallas to jump up all these spots and keep getting these picks, you're going to keep having teams like Brooklyn, like Utah, like Washington, trying to be bottom of the barrel so they can finally get lucky. I saw one guy, I forget who it was, he's like a columnist for the New York Times, you should stick to that. He had one of the dumbest lottery solutions. It was like a reverse order of the lottery. So like the team that has the NBA's like 17th worst record would have the 14th best odds in the lottery. They get the number one pick, and the worst team gets the 14th pick in the lottery. And that way your incentive is there to win. One of the dumbest things, I mean, just keeps the teams at the bottom longer. No team is going to get out of it, and you're just going to continue to have these teams like the Lakers and these big markets that can attract free agents dominate these smaller market teams that rely on the draft to build. That I don't expect that guy to know that, but it was one of the dumbest lottery solutions I've ever seen. I don't know if there's a perfect solution. I'm not a scientist. I'm not smart like that. I'm not going to offer one. I do know though that if you're going to get mad about tanking, don't get mad at the Wizards and Jazz for exploiting the rules, and don't get mad at them for doing so when they know they're probably not going to get punished. Like, get mad at the league, get mad at the NBA. The Wizards and Jazz are just doing everything they can to keep their pick. And I'd keep the same energy if the Nets were tanking too, which I'm sure they will in time, and other teams like the Indiana Pacers, who obviously get Zubac, he's going to be healthy to play at some point, and I doubt they'll play him this year, or at least much, because they don't want to win games. The same thing the Wizards are doing with AD. It's the same thing the Jazz will eventually do with Jaren, and the same thing the Raptors did last year with Brandon Ingram. They won't play these guys. Even if they're healthy, they won't. And there's no incentive to do so unless the league starts imposing punishment. So, you're mad about tanking, that's fine. Don't get mad at the teams or the GMs or the coaches, whoever's controlling it. Get mad at the league for not having it under wraps at this point. And so that's my mini rant on tanking. But that's going to do it for this episode of the Wizards podcast. Wizards fall 132 to 101 to the Miami Heat. They are now 14 and 38 on the season. They have one more game remaining before the NBA trade deadline, and that is on Wednesday at Cleveland, who just beat Sacramento. Harden played well. They have Donovan Mitchell. They're getting pretty healthy. I would say that's about 99% going to be a loss for Washington. Would expect Keyshawn George to probably not play. Same with Bilal. Maybe Sarr gets held out. And Washington guarantees that they enter the All-Star break at 14 and 39. And at that point, you have what, 29 games remaining after you come back. You just got to lose a decent bit of them, and you're setting yourself up to be in pretty good shape to guarantee that you keep your pick. A quick glance at the tank standings. You got Washington at 14 and 38, Brooklyn at 14 and 37. The Jazz have 16 wins, then a pretty steep difference between them and the 19-win Mavericks. New Orleans has 14 wins. Two more losses than the Wizards. Indiana has 13 wins, and Sacramento has 12. The Pacers are going to lose again today after, despite leading at halftime, they're currently down 20 in the fourth quarter. So they'll be at 13 and 40. And so the Wizards are close. They're right there. They'll probably be a game out of the second worst record entering the All-Star break. But I would expect them to be 14 and 39 when that time comes. But that's going to do it for this episode of the Wizards podcast. Thanks for listening as always. We'll be back on Wednesday to recap that game against the Cleveland Cavaliers. Thanks for listening as always. Go Wiz.